This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Well, in case you hadn't noticed, there's a new political divide emerging in Australia between those who support multicultural immigration and opening the doors to genuine asylum seekers and an increasingly loud group of voices who are against Muslim immigration. It seemed to start with Donald Trump in America. Now there's Pauline Hanson popularising this view in Australia, as well as Sonia Kruger this week, and even Fred Nile from the Christian Democratic Party. They're mostly fearful about the potential for terrorist elements to emerge if we allow more Muslim immigration, which seems a valid concern. With me for a chat about this is Dr. Richard Schumach. He's from the Centre for Public Christianity. He's a researcher with a PhD in Islamic philosophy, and he's also done a lot of work with Muslim refugees. Richard, thanks for your time.
Absolute pleasure. Great to be with you, Claire.
Now, firstly, do you think the fears of people like Pauline Hanson, Fred Nile, Sonia Kruger and so on are well-founded? Is there a danger of radical elements coming into Australia with regular Muslim immigration?
Well, it's certainly true that you do have radicalised elements within the Muslim community in Australia already, and some of those are from recent refugee populations. So I think it's right to say that there's the possibility and there's the real risk. But having said that, I think the way that it's been presented in the media, particularly the sort of claims of Sonia Kruger and Pauline Hanson, they're just overblowing the risk to ridiculous proportions in a way that just misrepresents the reality of just how dangerous things are.
Is the debate being oversimplified, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. That's one of the crucial problems, I think, is that particularly when you're speaking about a religion that has close to 2 billion people in the world, it's very rich and it's complex, and there are people there from many different cultures and backgrounds and educations and very lots of different theologies within that. And so to say that all Muslims believe this or Islam is just this is absolutely oversimplifying.
Mm. What are the positives that Muslim immigration has added to Australia?
Well, food for one.
Okay, yeah, let's get down to it.
I love going to a Turkish restaurant or a Lebanese restaurant, but that's a very superficial thing.
Yeah.
I think most Australians will recognise that one of the great strengths of Australia is its multicultural features, and beyond food, there are so many ways that we are richer because we're a mixture from so many different cultures. And so I guess one of the key things for me in working in a Muslim community was so much that we as Australians can learn in areas of hospitality and in areas of seeing things in a community way rather than just an individual way. And again, many Muslims, they take their faith very seriously, and also they're more than happy to be public faith people. And things like that, I think there's lots of really brilliant things about Muslim communities that I really enjoy.
If we look at people who are from moderate Muslim communities and who want to live peaceful lives within Australia, there are actually a lot of good moral values within their beliefs, aren't there?
Right. I mean, Islam, and Muslims will say this too, this is not just speaking as a Christian, but Islam grew out of Judaism and Christianity, and it inherited the moral framework and the theistic framework, and so there's a lot of alignment between the moral values of Islam and the moral values of Christianity. And as you say, most Muslims, the vast majority of Muslims, 80-85% of Muslims are moderate in the sense that they are not ideologically Islamic. They don't want to see Islam becoming the state religion, and they live ordinary lives where they're trying to, as you say, live morally good lives before God and good lives in the community, and they want to just get a job and work hard and provide for their families.
Mm. In your work with refugees, what kind of mix of attitudes have you seen among Muslims towards Australia, towards adopting our nation's values, and I guess particularly among people who have, you know, come from traumatic backgrounds?
Well, it's important to understand, again, there's a range of different Muslim communities and from different backgrounds. My particular people group were Somalis, who are some of the more conservative Muslim communities, and as well, actually, some of the most damaged in the sense that their backgrounds, they were highly traumatised by a very long war, and even the journeys from Africa to Australia were highly traumatic for many of the people that we knew.
Mm.
And so, again, at the risk of simplifying, I think the vast majorities of people that we worked with were people who were absolutely in desperate and genuine need. When they came to Australia, they were very thankful to be here. And even though their culture was very different and they found it hard to fit in, and in some ways they don't seek to entirely take on board everything in Australian culture, for the most part they were, through that trauma, working as hard as they could to try and build a new life in Australia. But it's also true that a small percentage were quite separatist. They were quite strongly Islamic. They would be Islamist ideologically, in the sense that they would like Australia to become a Muslim country. And to be absolutely honest, there were people I knew who are now in jail in Australia because of they were radicalized. Mm. And they wanted to pursue that very strident ideology. And I think we just have to recognize that there is a small percentage of Muslims that for whom that is that's their ideology, and that's what they're aspiring to politically.
What do you think is the solution to that issue of that element?
Well, again, we can't. One of the problems of the debate that we're seeing at the moment is it's very simplistic. And so people are offering solutions like, well, just keep everyone out.
Shut the doors,
Shut the doors, or give them a test and then export them. Things like that aren't going to work. I think there isn't a single simple solution, but I think one of the absolute key things is, and this is, a problem in the current debate, is that we need to understand that this is a theological issue for people. It might be social as well. People might be disaffected. People might be traumatized, but it's absolutely a theological issue. And so the key for mine, at least in engaging with Muslims, is you have to engage theologically with them, and you have to speak truths about God and challenge them and encourage them to think deeply about whether they think that a violent ideology is a true representation of what a loving creator would want from them. Mm. So I think at least one of the solutions, and it's not a magic bullet, and I think Christians are in a really unique position here where Christians are able to engage with Muslims not simply at a secular level and not simply at a sociological level and saying, well, we can see the reasons in your community, but we can go deep with them on the theology that underlies it, and we can challenge them about the truth of that.
Mm. How important is the role of kindness, love and acceptance and hospitality in shifting the heart of someone who's got that element of radical in them?
It's absolutely crucial. Because the way that happens, the way that you engage people on truth, at least the best way, is not by arguing with them, it's not by lecturing them, it's by engaging in a deep, caring relationship, and they get to know you. And that's when real sharing of ideas happen. Mm. And, yeah, of course, compassion, and especially in the refugee context, the first response has to be compassion. If someone is broken and suffering and in desperate need, the first response is compassion and love. Mm. And then that gives you a context within which you can speak truth, and sometimes even quite sort of hard truths to people. But yeah, relationship has to be foundational to being able to speak truth in any context.
I'd like to quickly get your thoughts on free speech, freedom of speech. We saw on the news a large group of protesters were outside the ABC the other night protesting the fact that Pauline Hanson was even allowed on the Q&A show to air her views. And while these aren't popular views with everyone, surely freedom of speech is still important. What do you say to that?
Yeah, of course free speech is important. And I don't want to be rude to one of our elected representatives, but from my perspective, Pauline Hanson's position is, at best, it's ignorant, and at worst, it's foolish and dangerous. Mm. But I think somewhere in there, intuitively, and I guess that the policies of her party are well thought out on this, and I think, again, it's much too simplistic, but somewhere in there, in the intuitions, and she's, particularly in Q&A on Monday night, she was responding to a very, very real issue. And the ideological Islam is a real issue around the world. Radicalized Muslims are involved in terrorism. That's a real thing. It's a real risk, particularly in Europe. It's a very real risk. And so it's foolish to shut down that conversation. Now, I think we need to move that conversation beyond simplistic and unhelpful comments, but we certainly can't shut down the conversation. Absolutely not. We are free to speak. I just think we need to take that freedom and speak wisely and carefully, and compassionately.
And just lastly, I'd like to ask, what would you say to the likes of, say, Sonia Kruger, if you had the opportunity to have a coffee, sit down with her and have a chat about her views and her fears, which are very real and are shared, I guess, by a lot of regular Australians? What would you say to her or someone like her in trying to gain common ground?
Well, in a nutshell, I think probably the key thing I'd say to her is you have to distinguish between ideological Islam and the vast majority of Muslims, particularly refugees, who are in very, very great need and who don't buy into ideological Islam. So you need to understand the landscape of what's happening in Islam. Most Muslims don't agree on what Islam even is. And so just realize that the fears, they're real. And of course, we need to take Islamism seriously. But don't be afraid where there's no real need for fear. And the vast majority of refugees in particular are in very great need. And I'd encourage you to go and meet some of the families that I spend time with and listen to their stories. Mm. And at the very least, have compassion that overrides fear. And that's what, I mean, the Bible says love drives out fear. And I think fears are real. And the Bible says don't be afraid for a reason, because there are things to fear. But I think love has to govern our fear. Love has to be the overriding expression of what it is to build a society.
That's Richard Schumack. He's from the Centre for Public Christianity. Richard, thanks for chatting.
Thanks for having me.